All right. I'm very pleased to present the co-author of this case from Israel, Dr. Sharon Denok. Dr. Denok is a serial entrepreneur. She's a leading authority in talent assessment using AI. Her clients include the Office of the Prime Minister of Israel and Nike. For 4 years, she was an organization consultant with the Israeli Defense Forces. Dr. Denok pioneered scientific approaches to talent selection and development. She founded two HR tech startups, including Informed Decisions, which is her current company. Informed Decisions leverages AI to track and mitigate interview bias. Dr. Denok was co-founder and chief product officer at Empirical, where she developed AI-based pre-hire assessments. Dr. Denok is a member of the Forbes magazine Human Resource Council. She is an advisor to System 3, a Canadian company that has technology to identify and evaluate human capital. Welcome, Dr. Denok. So, why don't we go around the room and to see what people had to say? So, the first room had Jack, Julia, Nicole, Piper, and Tim. Do you
Hi,
have a
everyone.
spokesperson?
Sorry, bad voice. Hi, everyone. My name is Tim. I'm a CEO of a startup. Our startup teaches executives AI, emerging technologies. That emerging tech right now is artificial intelligence. And we had three main points that we discussed. One of the main points was interesting, how the title of Chief Learning Officer wasn't something that was familiar to a lot of us. And then there was a parallel brought up to it's very similar to how the chief AI officer is a role that exists in some companies and most companies need, but they aren't ready to have. And I believe that this is very similar to the space where CLOs are in, chief learning officers. But because there were no exposure from those of us in the room, we couldn't give much of a understanding of what that might mean. And then the second thing of three that we discussed was an idea of pressure testing a selection, creating like these profiles using AI of a person who might fit the criteria, and you sort of kind of pressure testing together using AI as a sparring partner after creating these different profiles of what it might look like. And an idea came up that this was a selection committee, they do this, but even though selections committees do this, a lot of them actually don't themselves use AI. So when does AI get used at all in the process? And then the third thing that we discussed was, of course, the understanding of privacy, and how a lot of boards might not have a private instant difference, a private instance different from what the company itself might have. So what can you say to the AI? What can you not say to the AI? That sort of space is still blurry in the current state of where we are. And I think that's it.
Excellent. Thank you very much. The next group is room two, and that was Cindy, Juliet, Kim, Stefan, and Stefan.
Hi, I think I am speaking on behalf of our team. I am Kim McCauley. I run an advisory consulting firm that focuses on people and talent, which is right in the space of this case study. Our team really aligned on a few key points. I do want to reinforce Tim's point on utilizing the AI tool first to validate what good looks like by seeing other candidates. We didn't speak about that in our discussion, but it certainly would be something that we would advise as well. What we did speak about is a couple of things. First and foremost, before even selecting whether we use AI or not, the board really needs to align on what this role is required to do. They have this idea of a chief learning officer doing some level of learning. It feels like the accountability for this job is somewhat blurred. And so, regardless of whether AI is used or not, there really needs to be some alignment on strategy execution versus organizational learning, so that there's no ambiguity with the candidates coming in. And then that AI should not define that role. The board needs to do that outside of any AI in influence. And then we had a great discussion over the emerging tech and what's happening in our world and workforce. And we landed on we need to use AI very carefully in selecting candidates, particularly at this level. And it really should only be used as what we call the parallel input, along with other inputs, whether it be from the recruiting firm or whether it be from our own research that is done. And that the tool should not be put into a spot that is opining on judgment or soft skills or team player, but much more just on factual data. And then the last point that we really wanted to drive home was we would only advise utilizing the tool if it was applied consistently to all candidates without fail, so that we had the same benchmark data from the parallel input from AI, as well as the other inputs on all candidates, so that we didn't make a biased decision.
Good. Thank you very much. The next group is Kathy, Ingrid, Sharon, and Robert.
Thanks, Larry. So I'm Kathy Scala. I've been chosen as the newbie presenter,
Well,
but I've
welcome,
been
Kathy.
promised that I'll get help if I need it. So I think we had 3 points as well. I think the first one was, before we even dove into the AI discussion, was the fact that the case study talked about average. The company had been doing just average. And Robert made a point that if average looks like good now, it will look like bad tomorrow. So we questioned whether they actually did need the same type of CEO, as was alluded to, that there really should be an opportunity that the board takes to leverage and really look at what is the situational analysis around what the company's doing and their competitors are doing, and determining what kinds of skills that would take, and then who would actually fit that category that's somewhat different than what was described in the case. There's also the second suggestion that we didn't feel like the chief learning officer and the CEO had a conflict of interest as much as the fact that because that was lacking in someone in the HR field for the company really wasn't taking that responsibility, that there needed to be education for both the board and the company, somewhat separate from each other, particularly around AI, so that they understand what it can do and what it shouldn't do. And then be able to use that for the analysis of how it could help in this candidate search. And then I think the last thing that we talked about was really trying to take a step back from the tool versus the need and focus on where is this company going to go in the future? And make sure that they are change savvy, they are tech savvy. This is what I'm talking about, and have some of these forward-looking skills that will get them to another plateau besides average.
Good. Kathy, is your first meeting?
Yes.
Oh, why don't you introduce yourself?
Kathy Scala. I am a healthcare executive that worked in Chicago primarily for Abbott, Hospira, Pfizer, and Baxter. A lot of it was technology based, and then I moved into M&A and then rounded out that part of my life with transformation for 4 years, mostly cost reduction, but also the culture, because my argument was, we can make all of these changes, but they will not be sustainable unless you change the culture of the company as well. So I've done all that, retired, moved to Alabama, and now I'm doing a lot of board work and investment work.
I just sent a private note to Kathy welcoming her.
She's a dear friend for quite a few years. So this is lovely, and welcome, Kathy, to this
Thank you,
team.
Juliet. I appreciate that.
Good. Next group is Al, Babs, John, and Miss Case.
And hi, Kathy. Nice to meet you. My board is in Alabama, actually.
Oh,
So
excellent.
Alabama's rocking right now. So we went through the case, and the first question we had is, what is a board chief learning officer? There's a nom and gov committee. Usually, the nom and gov committee not only handles the hiring of the next CEO, but those types of things that are about governance and learning are usually handled by the nom and gov. And while it said you and Fred are independent directors, well, it's a NASDAQ company, so most of the board directors are, most of them are independent, and there has to be a nom and gov committee. So why are they picking different people for a selection committee? So the nom and gov committee that's supposed to, if only some of the people are the selection committee, then it's up to nom and gov to really appoint those. So we couldn't understand why there were separate conversations with people that weren't led by that committee. That was the first one. And then we were asking why there's a chief learning officer at all. Like, do you have people on boards that have chief titles? And what is this person supposed to do? We understand they have learning requirements, as all boards do. I think it was John that said, you know, were they getting outside presentations from experts on AI or cyber or, you know, what their competition are doing? I mean, they must be getting some outside advice, but it didn't look like that. And isn't that the role of the board itself? And isn't it individuals that suggest that? I mean, several boards have the lead independent suggesting what the gaps are in learning for the next year and what conferences they're going to go to. So maybe there's that role, but I mean, we just didn't understand what a chief learning officer was. What can AI help with? AI can help with anything you want it to help with. If you're using it to select a CEO, you should probably be looking at it to make sure that it's filling skills, you know, it has the right set of skills, right, that you're defining. If, but you could use it for anything, interview questions, tech strengths, behavioral strengths. It goes on and on, but we were of the thinking that you can, AI is not a thing. It's a thing to help other things. So if you have your strategy right and your direction and you're asking it the right questions, it could help with quite a lot. The last one was, oh, we thought there, you know, maybe there's supposed to be a CLO in the company, not for the board. So we weren't quite sure about that. And we also thought that each board member should be using AI within the confidentiality and all the, you know, taking care and be trained to know how to use it and when not to use it and how not to use it. But we thought it was a good idea that board members started having responsibility for using it to actually do their board work as well as direction from the board. And what did I miss, team? I know I missed something.
Okay, good. Thanks very much, Babs. The next room is Craig, Anna, Mitchell, and Robert.
Okay, and I've been appointed to speak. I should add at bayonet point. But we really covered a couple of topics just very briefly. Since the CEO and on occasion certain management senior executives speak to the board and provide them the information separate and apart from the audited financials, we have available AI today. And the board should feel very comfortable, and if they don't have that skill set, should be have training to use AI to Analyze the company's performance objectively because there's so much data that the company does provide, but how does that compare to industry trends, competitor trends? There's an objective way of inputting data to avail yourself of comparative performance of the company. But for the most part, we focus on the two fundamental questions, which is the use of AI in search. And we look at it as a supplement to an executive search firm. Executive search firms are supposed to be totally objective in fulfilling their assignment, but they can have certain prejudices built into the candidates that they're sourcing and a number of other considerations. And so AI can be used as a supplemental tool to source candidates that are not actively looking for jobs, that may not be in the database of the executive search firm. Clearly characteristics that the board feels or the search committee, and by the way, I agree with you, Babs, it's a public company. They're supposed to be a non-governance committee. And why is there a separate search firm? I mean, it could be a supplement to it. But AI can be used to supplement that search. It can be used for quality control, background checks. It can be used for predictive performances. After you have interviews with the various candidates and you make observations about personality traits, performance history, prior roles, AI can be a tool, and it's only a tool because at the end of the day, the human analysis and the board's judgment in hiring a new CEO has to has to be the final way to approve the candidate. But certainly, predictive performance as well, cultural fit are all subjective considerations, but they can be evaluated by AI, at least provide some directional support. Moving on to the question of the chief learning officer, the chief learning officer is not a board position. It is a C-suite role in a company. The role of the chief learning officer is to look within the company and determine or help determine where there are needs in the learning and development, both of departments, divisions, and individual candidates. And that can be a conflict with the CEO because the CEO, oftentimes driven by compensation considerations, is focused on short-term performance. And so therefore the CEO may say, we need training in this, or we need capabilities in that to deliver on the short-term performance. But the chief learning officer's role goes much deeper than that in terms of what are the long-term needs of the company. And to do that, you have to look, and you can use AI to input performance data, comparative data, a tremendous amount of information that will let you know where there are needs within the organization, where there could be greater efficiencies, greater production, where the needs are that will drive that hard data. So AI can supplement the role of a chief learning officer, which has different objectives to some degree with the CEO trying to provide that role.
Good. Thanks very much. And the final group is Craig, George, Jay Lee, and John and Jim.
I think I got elected as the spokesperson, unless somebody else wants to jump in here. Craig had to leave early, but we focused that there were two key questions here: CEO succession, and then the use of AI by the board. And we really focused more of our attention as Mitchell and Babs just said that the chief learning officer is a corporate function. And that's an issue for whether or not the company should have that. I think the board can have some input into that. But so beyond that, we said, well, we spent more time talking about if the board members are concerned that all their information comes from the CEO, like, well, does the board hear from other people, like the executive vice president level, the level just below the CEO, the people who run various departments? And where does the board also get How does it stay current? Where does it get information so it asks good questions and can challenge the CEO? And then we, as Bab said, we got into that, that's sort of the duty along with hiring new CEO of a governance committee. And that on the AI end of it, that, the governance committee maybe should be helping to determine, how the board is going to use AI, even not just focusing on AI, but how does the board stay current? And how do the board members stay up to speed in the industry so that they're able to ask intelligent, good questions and challenge management? And that AI is a good tool for that, as others have said. We did talk about how AI could be used to possibly evaluate candidates. We didn't get into as much depth as Mitchell's group did, but all of that sounds good. Then we actually, Craig, one of our members who had to go get his wife, he was using AI as we spoke to develop checklists that the board could use to evaluate candidates using ChatGPT. Basically, we came down to that, that this board probably needs to evaluate how it gets information, how it challenges the board, how it stays the management, how it stays current, also develop some tools for evaluating CEO candidates.
Good.
Jim or Ji, do you want to add anything?
George, I think that's a great summary. The only thing I would like to know, since I didn't do it, did anybody besides Craig use ChatGPT or some other AI tool to answer the question?
I did. I did. I did not want to volunteer it, but I did.
Okay, so about 25%. Okay.
Sure.
Satisfies my curiosity.
Or at least to analyze the question.
Okay.
Yeah, I would put it that way too.
So at this point, I'd like to turn this over to Sharon to react to the reactions to the case and give her comments and her perspectives. Sharon? Is Sharon here?
He's on mute.
I was on mute, of course. So hi everyone. Very happy to be here. Larry, thanks so much for having me. So I have to say I really enjoyed the discussion both in my small group and here in the large group. It aligns very, very well with the things I've prepared to share with you. So most of the things that I've prepared are things or implementations that you've already brought up in the group. So I would just like to expand a bit on each. So I'll start with and also share a few resources with you on the chat that I've prepared for the session and hopefully you could use. But the first thing, which I think came up in each and every group, is to actually define and align the board, and not just the board, but also every stakeholder that is involved in that in the hiring process on what good looks like. In terms of also, of course, conducting a benchmark research about, leadership skills or even predictive leadership skills, or where the world is going and what that means for leaders, but also just in terms of aligning all of us on what success will look like for the upcoming CEO in terms of their values, motivations, skills, behaviors, really having a clear definition. Because what makes many hiring processes fail in all levels is just misalignment, that we jump right into the selection, jump right into the how without having a clear definition of the what. So definitely AI can help us with that. And we've actually built a GPT, which I'm going to share now on the chat, that runs a structured intake conversation, asking you questions about the role, the success metrics in 6 months, in 12 months. It dives into the values, the motivations, the skills, helps you clearly define them, and eventually provides you with a success profile. So I'm sharing both the GPT link, but also for those of you who would prefer to work with a document, also a document version of it, so you can see two links right now on the chat. So that's definitely a key usage, and I'll also say an easy one, because that's something that AI does very well. It doesn't do everything fairly well, so that's why I loved also the critical view that came from you. This is not replacing us, this is amplifying our judgment. So I encourage you to every output that you get from the AI to look at it at a very critical eye, because all of us probably have touched to this or that extent, but also experienced AI hallucinating, making stuff up. It still happens even in the best and most sophisticated models. So the critical view is even more critical here when we're talking about, decisions that impact people's lives. So I do encourage you to take that critical view. Another usage that actually AI doesn't do that well, but it did came up, so I do want to refer to it, is some of you mentioned developing interview questions. Now, I will say that it's like the performance level is relative, meaning like if you just ask a hiring manager, which assessment is not their day-to-day job, to make up questions, probably AI will make up better questions. But what we need to remember is eventually the large LLM models like ChatGPT and Claude and Gemini, they are trained on all of the data that it's out there, and there is a lot of garbage in, garbage out, meaning there are a lot of pitfalls in the interview questions that it makes up. My work, my team's work, is to develop assessments and interview questions, and we work with AI every day to develop them. And we see a lot of pitfalls, like asking very worn out questions, like, why do you want to work here? And where do you see yourself in 5 years? These are the types of questions that candidates know that they're going to get asked. So they come with very well scripted and reversed answers. Also, leading the candidate types of questions. So tell me about a cross-functional collaboration you've led successfully. We're already telling them what we want to hear, right? Like they have the answer embedded within the question. And these are just two examples. There are quite a lot of pitfalls that AI is not able to overcome. And I'll also share an article that I've wrote about that topic, if you want to get more acquainted with those pitfalls. The way that you can overcome these is either use expert curated AI, like say, proprietary AI, like we're building, or you can still use the AI, but be aware of the pitfalls and then nudge it. And you've also said it here, context is everything. And AI, if it doesn't have context, it will just give you generic stuff that will lead to generic responses from the candidates. So provide it with as much context as possible. I see that there was, oh, I see that someone had an issue with the link. I'll take care of it, and I'll share all of the links also later via email. Asking questions, there is work to do there, but I still think like it's better than the average person. You need to be aware of the pitfalls. Something that I'm not sure that came up is AI transcripts and summaries. We all know in every video conversation that we're having today, it either automatically transcribes or we can invite it to transcribe. There are tools today, including ours, that also transcribe face-to-face conversations. That transcription, what it gives us is real documentation. It gives us real evidence on what was actually said in the interview, in the conversations, versus what we remember that was said, which is biased. I don't know if you know the sentence, we don't see people as they are, we see them as we are. That even amplifies itself as time passes. So our memory is selective, we have the primacy, the recency bias. So in that sense, the transcription is a gold mine. Why? Because we can rely on it to align everyone on what happened, like to assess on the same criteria on actually what candidates told us and not just on what we remember. And another thing that we can do is, and I think that was also mentioned here, is we can use AI as an additional team member. Eventually, what research shows is the assessment is becoming more and more accurate as you integrate or as you average multiple tools and multiple perspectives. So the more independent views or assessments of a person that you have, it makes your assessment more accurate. So what you can actually do is to give the transcript to the AI, tell them exactly what skills are you aiming to assess, and then have it assess those skills. Again, it's not instead of your judgment, but it's another perspective that might be less biased because sometimes, you know, the people that you're considering are also in your circle, you know them in some way. So some of you have a biases towards specific people. That gives us a kind of an external view or an external assessment of the candidate. Another application is actually monitoring for interviewer bias. So we've talked about the fact that, you know, we're all human, we're all inherently biased in the way that each of us is interviewing. We can capture a lot of data that we can actually see patterns of individual interviewer bias. That's a part of what we're doing. So that's another thing that you can actually do with AI. I'll just give you an example. So for example, once your interviews are documented, transcribed, they're logged, like their hour is logged, one bias that we see is the time of day bias. So, for example, with a few of our clients, what we saw is that candidates that are being interviewed in the afternoons after 1 p.m., they are getting consistently lower scores than the ones that are interviewed in the mornings. Why? Probably, you know, interviewers are cognitively deluded, they're tired, they're after lunch, etc. That's only one. We can see some interviewers that there is a specific skill that they're impressed more of. For most of us, it's effective communication. So we can see how they score different skills and then their overall impression. We can actually correlate these. So just analyzing the data, the scores that you provide, your notes, the transcription, that is a goldmine to looking at each interviewer's assessment patterns and to improving the way interviewers interview, but just providing them with customized feedback about their interview practices. I have more, but I want to be respectful of the time that we have. So, Larry, let me know if I should stop here.
Well, let's just go. And do people have any questions for Sharon? Please raise your hands, anybody? John Ela.
Thank you. Very interesting presentation and material. Thank you. Do you have any data on what the outcomes are bringing AI into the candidate evaluation and search process compared to
Yeah.
not doing it?
Yeah, so it's implementing AI is fairly new, and some companies are doing it, but companies are not doing it in a consistent way, and there are also multiple applications. And there are also multiple KPIs that we need to look at. Like when we talk about an effective selection process, the three most important KPIs are accuracy, efficiency, and fairness, right? So when we talk about accuracy, there isn't a robust proof that an AI assessment is better or more accurate than a human assessment. There is a lot of years of research, like tens of years of research that are showing that a statistical analysis of a person, meaning just averaging different assessments of the same person, is more accurate than just like a one person general impression. And that's something that AI does consistently. So what I think we'll see over time, that companies that are using AI not to make the decision, but to aggregate multiple data points will be able to be more predictive. In terms of efficiency, we know that there are huge efficiency gains, and there are also case studies about that. So in terms of efficiency, yes, we already have proof for that. But it also comes at the expense of candidate, it can come at the expense of candidate experience. So for example, now there are a lot of new tools for AI interviews as an initial screen, meaning instead of a recruiter doing the initial screen after reviewing the CV, there is actually an AI avatar that is interviewing you. And there are many candidates that just withdraw from processes like these. They say like, I want to meet a human. I want a human to talk to me. Like that's disrespectful of my time versus other people that are saying this just levels the playing field. Like it gets more people in the door because now you can interview everyone. So it's a fast evolving landscape, not many companies are conducting research in a very systematic way. One thing that we do is that we track the decisions that people, that interviewers are making with our platform, and also then tracking the performance and retention of those that were hired. So we're able to close the feedback loop and to assess accuracy, fairness, and efficiency of the hiring process, but that doesn't happen in organizations at scale yet. Hopefully, it will. I see
Jaylee
Larry.
has her hand raised. Jaylee?
Yes, hi, Sharon. Thank you so much for the case. That was obviously a very interesting case and guided some very interesting conversation here. So, on the topic of chief learning officer, right? So, obviously, AI is a relatively new phenomenon for us to apply to, the board work and so forth. I'm curious as to, do you think that a CLO in that sense is necessary, or would it be more appropriate to think about having somebody either internally or externally to help the board to get up to speed in terms of using AI to challenge employ AI in the thinking process, in the board work. And as the board gets more up to speed, it seems to me that it will become more of a process that would not necessarily involve a chief learning officer. So what's your take on that?
Yeah. So first, a disclaimer, I'm not a learning and development expert, but I feel the board in a sense, in a meaningful sense, they are a part of the organization, an important part of the organization. If the organization has, and most organizations have, a learning and development function, they should also focus on how do they train the board to audit, to make better decisions. And AI is a significant part of that. They should not be neglected. So I completely agree with you that as companies are working towards training their employees, their leaders on AI, the board should definitely be a part of it. And because they have their specific use cases, the training should also be customized. But since like there are many areas of decision-making where the board has to input, and in most of them, they're not domain experts, then how to efficiently use AI in order to think critically about the topics that they need to make a decision, how to inform themselves, which questions to ask, looking at ChatGPT and creating a checklist like you did here in the session, right? So these are the types of tools, in my opinion, that we should provide board members
Tim,
with.
Tim White has a question. Tim?
Hi, Tim. Oh, you're on mute.
You're on mute, Tim.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi, Sharon. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate your amazing.
Could you turn the volume up, Tim?
I will speak louder. That's what I'll do. Jaylee took my question, but I love it. I had a similar question. Actually, I think I'll piggyback a little bit off of what Jaylee was mentioning. So I'm not a learning expert, but I this is kind of why I kind of started my company, was because I saw this little bit of a gap. And in my perspective, I agree that the chief learning officer could be a good resource for the board as a temporary thing. But the thing is, the emerging technology will always develop. So naturally, it feels like there has to be these additional types, these new types of consulting engagements, whether that be advisory or internal to the companies. And it feels like we're not at a stage yet where boards can operate independently as the technology is changing so quickly. But my question actually was going to be in the space of a CLO, or is that Chief Learning Officer, whatever the acronym might be, versus the HR individuals that I know that you work with. Do you see that the space that they're starting to consider is expanding outside of just helping the employees understand what not to use ChatGPT for? Or is it starting to be a little bit more of a systemized approach to learning these emerging technologies internally to some of these companies?
Yeah. So that's not me, just this is just what research shows, is that individual users or employees are progressing much quicker than the organizations. And that makes sense, right? It takes time for an organization to move, to understand, to characterize exactly what they need to prioritize in terms of any training, and specifically AI training. So what we see is that individual users or individual employees are experimenting with AI independently on their specific use cases. In terms of companies, yes, they want to figure out what are those key areas that they need to upskill. And usually, you know, it starts like in tech companies, it will start with the developers, like the core positions that drive the business. And then from there, but yes, a lot of companies are adopting tools and kind of going through an AI transformation. And there was a recent MIT a study about it that showed that like it was an alarming statistic, something like 90% of AI initiatives fail. And that's because, you know, companies are excited to implement something at scale, but then probably most of them forget it's also a change management process. And there are humans involved, and some of them are concerned that this might take my job. So should I use it? Shouldn't I use it? And, you know, they run to implement technologically without taking into account the human aspect. And that's what makes a lot of these fail.
We have two more questions, and then we have to stop.
I'll
Steph,
just,
thank you for your patience.
Oh, good. If you don't mind, I'll just jump in for a moment, Larry, because I want to tail on what Sharon said about what's happening inside organizations currently. I can speak from real experience regarding some big tech companies that are implementing AI, and you were spot on. They have to partner with the Office of Change Management and also partner with IT. And that it really is not a chief learning officer's role. It really is falling onto the strategy role combined with IT and also combined with some level of change management. The second piece I'll say about this is you're seeing acceleration where AI is built into some of the IT governed tools. So Copilot inside of Microsoft's program where IT can still govern and control access and information and see what's happening, you are finding far less of the free-for-all, just use any tool that you want and download it off your computer. So just wanted to echo that.
100%. That's also what I'm seeing. Yep. Thank you for sharing.
And finally, Stefan.
So thank you, Larry. And because I'm the last thing between everybody and, you know, perhaps their dinner, I want to piggyback on the last comments that you made about the product. When we evaluate physicians, we have an oral board examination, and they go through multiple exams with multiple different examiners. So it's how do you level the playing field? And we employ psychometricians, and it takes an enormous amount of effort after the examination to reconcile all of the various scorings and making sure that we're being as fair as possible and leveling the playing field. It sounds like your product is doing the work of the psychometrician. I understand how that might be useful for the recruiting firm because you have the interviewers and you can learn what the interviewer's style is and what have you. Can you also apply this more quickly to the final interviews that a board might do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a great question because eventually to diagnose a pattern, you need to have like multiple data points. So I can't, AI can't diagnose your patterns based on one, two, three interviews that you do. We were able to start seeing patterns from 10 interviews and above. So it really depends on how many candidates do you see and what's like how many interview rounds for each candidate. But I will say that we can also derive insights based on a single interview just from the type of questions that you're asking. Are you adhering to the structure or are you just kind of free flowing? What is the language that you're using? What is the sentiment? Does it change if the candidate is a male or a female? If they're coming from different ethnicities, etc. So there are multiple things that we can see within an interview, analyzing the transcript and your scores and provide that feedback. And that's actually something that we're doing, like immediately after the interview, we provide you with feedback on that specific interview. But to see an overarching pattern, it needs multiple interviews. And that really depends on how many candidates and how many interview rounds you're conducting.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your participation. Thank you, Sharon, for your comments. We look forward to seeing you next month. Our case is going to be written by John Ela, who many of you know, and it should be very interesting. Happy New Year to everybody. Stay warm if you're in the Boston area, and take care. We'll see you next month.
Chicago, too.
Chicago, too.
Go Patriots. See you later.
Go Pats.
Bye-bye.
Go Pats.